Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, we give you a peek into the upcoming Flor y Canto Literary Festival in the San Francisco Mission. We'll hear from festival organizers Ricardo Tavares and KALW's Josiah Luis Adrete, poetry from Soledad Concarne and Lourdes Figueroa, and a reading by writer Rolando Andre Lopez. Today's show is about the Mission's literary legacy. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Next weekend, the Mission District's very own literary festival returns. It's called Flor y Canto, which translates to flower and song. Spend 3 days listening to stories and prose by Latino, Latinx, Latine writers. The readings will be in the Calle 24 Latino Cultural District, which is around 24th and Mission. And joining me here in studio are two of the festival's organizers. Ricardo Tavares is a Bay Area educator and arts organizer, and KALW's Josiah Luis Adrete is the host of Bay Poets and co-owner of one of my favorite bookstores, Medicine for Nightmares. Hey, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hola, Janae.
Yeah, I'm so happy you all are here. I didn't even know about this. How did I miss this?
It's one the Flor y Canto is one of San Francisco's best kept literary secrets. Mm. Honestly, it's been around for over how long, Ricardo?
10 years.
Yeah, man. Wow, but okay. But yeah, it's still it never ceases to amaze me how many people actually don't know about it.
Yeah. Okay, so who started it?
So it was actually started, the idea of a Flor y Canto has existed forever. It's actually a Mexica idea, flower and song. It's a metaphor for poetry. So there have been Flor y Cantos through time immemorial. Mm-hmm. But the one that we're talking about now, the San Francisco Flor y Canto Festival, was actually started in 2015 by Alejandro Murgia, beloved Mission poet, when Alejandro was the first Latino poet laureate of San Francisco.
Okay.
So he started that, you know, the San Francisco Flor y Canto, and it's been going ever since, honestly.
And Ricardo, you've been a part of it practically the whole time?
Yes. I was a student at San Francisco State, and that's where, you know, we were being introduced to local poets and being encouraged to organize and to activate spaces like coffee shops, hairdresser salons, taquerias, yeah, restaurants, and being able to bring poetry, you know, out to the streets.
So you all have been around for 10 years. So how has it evolved over these last 10 years, would you say?
I mean, it's interesting because, you know, in a lot of ways, it was started to celebrate the Mission's vibrant literary history, right? Mm-hmm. But over the years, I know it's also expanded that to like kind of illuminate a lot of our other connected culturas, you know? So it's definitely, it gets associated a lot as like a Latine or Latinx literary, you know, event. But over the years, it's definitely expanded, you know, to that. So like, you know, like this year, I mean, we've got Barbara Jane Reyes, you know, for those of you that know the Bay Area, know what a amazing Filipina poet, teacher she is. Mm-hmm. She's curating a Filipino reading, you know, so we've got the Before Columbus Foundation doing a reading as well. So there's the idea of like the Flor y Canto has really expanded over the years in that way where we're including other communities, right? Mm-hmm. Other familia. And it's beautiful, but it's still, I think, very much centered in Mission culture and celebrating the Mission's history. Because, you know, a lot of people, man, they're under the mistaken impression that North Beach, with its white imported beatniks, is the literary heart of San Francisco, you know. But respectfully, I will disagree. I mean, the Mission is, you know, is where the poets from Nicaragua and other parts of Central America came in the 80s and 90s and kind of revitalized the neighborhood, politicized the neighborhood, you know. The Mission is where Oscar Zeta Costa wrote his books on Valencia Street and an SRO. You know, the Mission is where the plays of Sherry Moraga were produced. You know, Kathy Arliano's from the Mission. The Mission is the home to Leticia Hernandez Linares, Salvadorian teacher, you know, at State. The home of Paul Flores, the home of Norman Zelaya, you know. So the Mission is a vibrant literary place, and the Floricanto really does celebrate that, you know, in a big way.
Josiah Luis knows so much history.
Oh, man.
Because the mission is home for you.
The mission is home. Definitely.
What does this festival bring to the mission?
So,
Ricardo. Mm-hmm.
So the festival this year, right, we tried to include workshops. We tried to include children's programming, interviewing authors, having panels, readings, and inviting a poet or a group of poets from outside the area. We've had poets come from Central America, come from Mexico, and be able to bring that international component to the
right,
festival.
Right, because it is an international festival, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
It's also that idea, what you're mentioning, what it brings to the neighborhood, Janae. There's also that very powerful thing of, like, our gente, and by gente I mean black and brown folks, seeing themselves in literature. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's a very powerful thing. For me, I'll never forget that moment as a kid, as a teenager, you know, reading a Chicano poet's work. So for us, I think the Floricanto is very important that happens, and it does happen, and it's a really beautiful thing because the neighborhood, they come into these places, like Ricardo was saying earlier, you know, it's these, they're not just like bookstores. They're also like Presida Eyes. It's there's a reading in front of La Reina Bakery, you know, this beloved bakery in the mission.
Yes.
There's a reading in front of Praxis. It's these spaces where people walk by and they're going to see themselves reflected in the words of these poets. And that's a really powerful thing, man. And it's something to really celebrate.
You know, Josiah Luis, you mentioned just a long list of writers, very, very well-respected, amazing writers, inspired by the mission. And the mission has a pulse.
Yes.
That community has a pulse. What is it about the mission that inspires? Right, because even when I go there, like, I feel so inspired artistically when I'm there. What is it about it that inspires literature and the arts?
I always say it's the Calle 24, 24th Street is the most living street in the city, right? So, like, I mean, there's no other street you're going to go down in the city. Maybe you disagree with me, Ricardo, if you want, but I honestly, like, you go down 24th Street and you're going to hear música, you're going to see colores on the walls, you're going to see history, you're going to hear multiple languages, you're going to see familia, poets, right? You know, it's like, so how could you not be inspired by that? You know, the colors, you know, how many Santana songs can you hear while you're walking? You know, one of them is going to get to you, you know, after a while, you know, if it's Oye Como Va, Black Magic Woman, or, you know, but... So that street, you know, Mission Street's the same way. You know, you go down and there's so much life. You know, that neighborhood, you know, gentrified as it has become over the years, and that is not a new story to San Francisco, but, you know, we're still there. And the colores still bleed out of the street, and the words of the poets are still remembered and echo, you know, on 24th Street. So it's an inspirational place. I honestly, you asked me that question, I think, how could you not be inspired, you know, by being there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what comes to mind for me is one of the first Floricantos we did with Alejandro Murguia, Ernesto Cardenal, came from Central America, and there was a beautiful event at the Bravo Theater. And I think there's a connecting, that literary history, that heart, right, that transcends time and humanizes us.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. And being able to be part of that, I think, is vital to being able to also pass that down.
Mm-hmm.
Because the same way that we had mentors, maestros, maestras, pass that down to us, we have to keep that going.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
We have to keep that fire lit and present it to folks who are interested and want to keep going too.
And you talk about passing it down. Are there things for children to do, for youth at the festival?
It's I mean that's what's beautiful about the mission's literary history is there is always those veteranos in the neighborhood that are teaching the youngins, you know. It's beautiful. But yeah, there are some amazing youth events this year.
So for
Sunday
we're going to be having, let's see.
I kind of through a surprise.
Well, it's exciting because the artistic director of the Floricanto, Amanda Ayala, is actually doing a children's workshop Sunday afternoon at what time, Ricardo?
At 2 o'clock. It's going to be a pop-up workshop, and it's going to be with Amanda Ortiz at Medicine for Nightmares. Amanda Ayala, sorry.
Okay. Yeah, because I was going to mention Josiah, because I've seen kids in your bookstore.
Oh, my
God.
So
you have, like, a really good selection of children's books in your store.
That workshop is going to be amazing, because Amanda's got, she's all about hands-on. She did a workshop last year, and it was the kids loved it. So, but that's the kid event on Sunday. And then also we have a young adult event happening after Amanda's workshop, which is going to be really cool. Darren De Leon, another old Mission veterano, wrote his first YA novel. What time is that, Ricardo?
That one is at 3 p.m. And it's with Darren De Leon, who was also a member of Los Delicados.
And we'll have a link to on the Sights and Sounds page on KLW.org, so people can look at the schedule. If you're just tuning in, I'm here with some organizers from Florida Econto Literary Festival, and it's going to happen next Friday through Sunday in the Latino Cultural District around 24th and Mission in San Francisco. So June is a busy month. A busy, busy month, and we know Pride is this month, and there's like a million things to do for Pride. So how are you incorporating Pride into the festival?
I think the big one for us is that we're honoring Francisco X. Alacron this year for the Floricanto. And for those of you that don't know, Francisco was a beautiful queer Latinx poet from the neighborhood and was an inspiration to so many of us. It was, for me, who was one of the first poets I ever heard that wrote poetry in Nahua, which was one of the indigenous languages, you know, that our ancestors used, and he was a big part of the mission's literary history, you know. So we're really proud and feliz to be honoring him this year. And also the first night of the poetry crawl, the first night of the Floricanto is a poetry crawl. And that's basically featuring an all a queer black and brown lineup. There's Sampaguita Press, an amazing queer Filipino press from San Jose that's going to be reading in front of Praxis. Mm-hmm. After that, in front of La Reina Bakery is going to be our very, very dear familia, Cuicle Collective, is going to be coming down from the 818 to bring some poetry fire. They're featuring poets that are going to be in their new anthology. What's the new anthology called? It's probably the most epic name in the world. This Bridge Called My Strap. That's right. That's going to be there. And then also, that's not a swear word. And then also our very dear Lourdes Figueroa is curating a queer reading in front of Galeria La Raza. So we're definitely honoring our queer familia this year at the Floricanto with those events.
You know, I'm happy this festival is happening. And unfortunately, it couldn't happen at a better time. Bittersweet. Just with what's going on, you know, in the country with immigration. Yesterday, there was a protest against ICE at an immigration courthouse in downtown San Francisco, not far from KLW space in downtown. And there were hundreds of people protesting. There were reports from Mission Local that ICE had arrested two people outside of the court building. And so we're living in heartbreaking times. We're living in parables of the sower time.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, what's the significance of the festival this year in light of what's happening? I mean, I know the power of literature, you know, for times like this.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think any time that we can be together in a space that affirms our humanity is a space that is necessary.
Yeah.
Definitely. And then also, yeah, it's also that idea of, you know, we art is a thing that we admire, is beauty, is something that's there for us to feel awe towards. But we as black and brown artists, we also use art to create our futures. Yeah. So you just mentioned Parable of Sowers, right? I mean, we are living in these times. So like the art that's created right now and the art that's out there for people to look at right now, a lot of it is there for us to help us walk through this, you know. So it's the significance of the Floricanto right now is important, and it's those things, all those elements are there right now, you know.
And I imagine it's to help kind of process and understand what's happening, and then also too to make space for joy as well. Because as we were laughing just before, I know brought up this heavy topic. So
yeah, joy is important to have. They can't take that away from us, you know.
Yeah. But y'all going to have a good time. I know y'all going to have a good time, too. Yeah.
There's going to be pozole the last night, too. So Maria's mama's making pozole. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a good time.
I was about to say, I know it's going to be some good food. Oof. I mean, you can just walk outside in the mission. It's some good food.
Yeah. But this is Maria's mama's pozole. This is like a whole other level of pozole. Like, you know, this is very exciting.
Okay. So we getting homemade food, some good literature, buy some books, supporting the community, and it's free.
It's all free. 18 literary events, all free. We are always accepting donations because we are the thing about the Floricanto Literary Festival, it's 100% donation based. No grants are ever applied for because we're all crazy overworked people that never have time to do that kind of stuff. So we basically rely on all donations for it. But so if you can donate, that's beautiful. If you can't, please come down anyway and check out the events.
All right. Thank you both so much for it. And I know we're going to hear from you a little later because we're doing a whole hour on this festival. So thank you so much, Ricardo Tavares and KALW's Josiah Luis. They're organizers of the Floricanto Literary Festival in the San Francisco Mission. The festival is June 20th to the 22nd, and we'll have a link to the schedule on our webpage. Coming up, we'll be back pronto with two poets from Floricanto. Don't change that dial. There's more to make you think and maybe smile. We'll be back. You're listening to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darton. Today, we're giving you a sneak peek into the Floricanto Literary Festival happening in the Mission next weekend. And so we're going to hear some poetry from two poets, Lourdes Figueroa and Soledad Concarne. And we'll start with Soledad Concarne. They describe themselves as a casually queer, intergalactic Chicanx punk poet, working poor, multiple high school dropout from San Fernando Valley. Hey, Soledad.
Hey, Janae.
So yeah, go ahead. Please share some of your work.
For sure. Yeah, I'll just jump into it. This one's called, it's just a letter, pretty much. Goyal Shauki, I walked into a new house on our old street. Nostalgia offered to cut my hair and ask the same questions like he used to. We shared joy in discussing the new coats of paint layered over cracked murals, and with laughter in our throats, we scold abandoned houses for staying useless. The CVS on Roscoe and Van Nuys has been empty since you moved out of the neighborhood. Remember, me and you stole red lipstick from there because we wanted to be like if Selena Quintanilla had Liberty Curls and played the upright bass. When we were kids, you could get all the stray cats to follow us to school just by singing. And even then, I knew enough about the stars to know they only blinked to stop from staring at your beauty. When we were kids, your family lived just two buildings down. And I'd call your name on the other side of the emerald green fence to play neighborhood adventurer and break into empty houses, searching for a fortress of our own. Now I don't know any of the families with keys to that rusted gate. And last I heard, you have three kids with a man who used to make a living selling marijuana before the flower became as common as the bougainvillea bush that follows the dash bus throughout the valley. But you know what? If I were half the drunk I used to be, I'd call your name outside the apartment complex you haven't lived in for over a decade. I would stumble across the poop-infested lawn and yell, Goyal Shauki, you broke your promise. Goyal Shauki, you grew up to be what you swore you wouldn't, both your mother and mine. But I grew up to be what I said I would. El Sol. And when I'm back in the neighborhood, rising from whatever couch I'm crashing on, I am the morning star that shines through these streets that we played in as kids. I shine through these streets with more new neighbors and less old friends. And I admit, I still miss you all the time.
Thank you.
I swore I reread that poem and did not see that word.
But we gotta pretend we didn't see that word, too. Okay. Did you have another piece you wanted to share with us? Or should I toss over to Lourdes?
Lourdes can go.
Okay. Let me introduce Lourdes too. Lourdes Figueroa is a queer Chicanx oral poet and poetry filmmaker whose work is a dialogue of her lived experience when her family worked in El Sodón, tilling of the soil under the blistering sun in Yolo County. So Lourdes, what do you have for us?
Hi, Janae.
Hello.
I'm probably going to have time to read one poem from a series of poems that are titled A Winter Triptych, which is three self-portraits. And I'll read this one because it's Josiah's favorite poem right now.
Okay.
It's actually one of my favorites right now. Self-portrait as a lemon that looks like an orange. My face is round, soft to the touch. I appear to you according to you. Inside, I am a surprised, sweet, bitter, tangy taste. I belonged to a tree once in my life. Then, as I began, mortality did not exist. In my mouth, I bloomed like pink magnolia trees during a San Francisco February. My mother's thick arms holding my siblings all at once, giggles under a white sun. I am full of seeds that will be spit into the compost on the kitchen counter. In an apartment on Ocean Avenue where two sisters live, an apartment that sits above and inside an optometrist's office. Life, a continuous Steadicam shot, an aquarium of oversized goldfish staring, saying, this is me, this is me. A travel agency at the entrance, walls of glasses, a rooster in his cage, three golden brown hens that coo on Saturday mornings. Since coming here, I have learned to see futures, know that my death will be painful. My membrane torn off from my body, exposing soft furry veins. Mm. And as I foresee my end, I know now that I belong to no one. I sprouted and became joy in cold seasons. The dark of night growing from the center of my navel. Nothing seeing me in those hours of digestion. My siblings have looked into the future, seeing how the world might have gone on without us. My torn skin becoming a home to tiny spiders, the kind that fly into a world that has been burnt to the ground. And before I die, here's the astonishing scene in the room. A pair of old crutches by the doorway, on the kitchen counter, a pencil, two Starbucks mugs, a wooden bowl, its contents a yellow onion, a torn open garlic club, a bag of rice, abandoned coffee grains, and a most beautiful light coming in from the window, casting long yellow shadows on the floor of a human and two dog bodies.
Mm. Wow. Wow, those are both amazing pieces. Soledad, did you want to read another piece or...
I thought that one, I have a bad concept of time. I thought it was going to be 4 minutes, but it wasn't. I have a new poem that's a little, I think it'll work.
Okay.
Okay. This one's just called.
So we'll do one more because I'm taking notes as y'all reading the pieces and then we'll jump into chatting. Okay.
Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
So this one's called Tres Fridex in the Bathtub. I am the cracked porcelain of the child's mind, a scar on what could have held the Pacific in her entirety. Salt comes from tears of the black and white Tezcalipocas, arguing on shoulders frustrated by their own hunch. Panorama Tower protrudes through the water. The San Andreas fault line still clings to the base, a serape of bougainvillea draped around the rim. Lake Merritt filled with La Brea tar, chunks of the five with hope shy float past Hollywood stars, cracked in the center. Keller and Zuma Beach shift and interlace with the waves. Visions of destiny and chance, dressed as a bottle of mezcal and una paloma negra, float and flutter above, playful in their fight, follow each other's necklines with lips almost ready to forgive. Gaze into the water, see her reflection, reach in, try to hold her face again, just to end up with my arms wrapped around my legs, our red string of fate still tangled in my hair, frayed at the ends, wrapped around my neck. The portrait of poppy flowers in her abuela's backyard that I planted in her image clogs the drain. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'd have to just kind of breathe and just take all of that in. You both, like I said, I'm familiar with both of you and your work. So it's really a pleasure to have you on. Soledad, since you just read, what I noticed about your poetry is that, you know, there's nostalgia, at least those pieces, is your use of place. And location, and when talking about memory and nostalgia, I love the line, because I used to live in LA. I'm from Oakland. I lived in LA. So I love that line in that last piece where you like Lake Merritt filled with La Brea tar. Can you talk about that? Just how you use place when it comes to memory and nostalgia?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, place is a really important just aspect in my work, just because I feel like we are so, everybody's just products of their environment in a way that, like, for lack of a better way of saying that, but like people don't understand that, like, that's not necessarily a negative or positive. It's just kind of like, this is what's surrounding you. And me, I'm very California. I'm from LA. I'm from the Valley, but like, I did spend my time in Oakland and San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And like, I love both of those places so much as well. And just like using, you know, the environment that's like the speaker of the poet is like physically in, I think it helps root it in a very specific time and like, again, place and like just everything that like the histories that come with those areas, mm-hmm. which I think are, we're constantly affected by in one way or another. Like it's always something that's gonna be there regardless of how connected or disconnected people wanna be. And that's why I think it's an important thing to kind of like always include, just like that these things are happening in these places, specifically LA, the Bay, you know, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Lourdes, what I noticed about your work, is how the body is a story. The body tells the story, at least in that piece you just read. Can you talk about how you use the body when in your pieces, when telling a story, when just expressing emotion through word?
Sure. The poem comes from the body. The poem is an extension from the body. And it's also an extension of the worlds we live and in the, you know, like echoing on what Soul just brought in regarding place and how it makes us and how, like, regardless, it is part of us, you know? And so naturally I like, that's how the poem arrives for me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I continuously work with the poem. I think it really is like that for artists. It comes from our inner, right? What we take in and also what we bring out into the world is like us reaching out, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're reaching towards each other. So it will always be, no matter what, like the poem, the painting, the photograph, it's an extension of you, and it's coming from you, and it's coming from everything that has made you. And to arrive to that point, whether you're picking up a pencil, you're picking up a paintbrush, it's very bodily. Or even when you're making a film, right? It takes the whole, it takes a whole village, but it takes also a lot of work to make a film too. It takes the body,
right?
It takes all these tools, right? So. For me, I mean, that's how I can answer that question.
No, that was beautiful. But both of the answers to my questions were beautiful. So I thank you both. So for people listening, I can't imagine why they would not want to go hear you read some more of your work. So what panels are you all going to be on during the Florida Canto Festival? Who wants to go first?
Do I go, Sol?
I guess I was just, I don't, I should just jump in and talk. You could go first. I'll answer second.
Okie dokes. I'm part of the Fluente Canto crew, so I'm going to be reading with the only spot that I'm going to be in is reading with Wasachi and with Wasachi Journal. Mm-hmm. So, and that's on, I believe that's Saturday afternoon there at Medicine for Nightmares. I think it's at 5. And then there's, other than that, I'm like in the background with the rest of the community, the familia that organizes the Floricanto. So
yes, because Josiah Ricardo would tell me that you're one of the organizers too of the festival. So yeah, what's the theme for that panel?
The one that I'm in, it's I believe it's just it's poets that are being published in the next issue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And what about you, Soledad? Where can people find you at the festival?
So I'm going to be I'm hosting one of the readings for the poetry crawl on Friday, the one in front of La Arena Bakery. I'm coming up with my collective. We're called Kukatlikwe Collective. We're based in LA and the IE down here in SoCal. And I'm coming up with two Valley poets, Angelica Sanchez and Sel Nguyen. And then there's also going to be some East Bay poets reading Trin Le and Danny Blackman. So yeah, it's just a representation of this. We're based in SoCal, but we try to work with like all these different folks that we share community with, and that spans California and all that. So like we're going to come up and like spend time with all our San Francisco folks, and it'll be a good time for sure.
Ah, I love that Bay Area LA literary connection. We're going to wrap up in a minute. We have just under a minute left. Lourdes, I'll go back to you. Briefly, what does this festival mean to you?
For me, it means connection, community, and it means reaching out into the past, present, and future. It's for me, it's very humbling to be able to be part of the family that like we meet, and we want to make this, and we make this out of love, and that's really the work, and I think that's sacred.
Yeah,
I think it's part of just like even like what Ricardo was saying. It's us like being human, and it humanizes as we're human. You know, we have grief, we fall in love, we have loss. Just it's a very fundamental thing.
And Soledad, we have a few seconds, just a few words, what this festival means to you.
Oh, it's like a family reunion, you know, like I've been indirectly involved with the Floricanto for this is the third year. And yeah, it means I get to come up and see my family and, you know, meet new poets and make bigger poetry connections and also just kind of vibe in the mission. That's what it is.
All right. Thank you both so much. Thank you for your poetry, your work, and your voice, and for coming on. Thank you. All right. Soledad Concarne's chapbook is SFV or Daifu. And Lourdes Figueroa's chapbook is Vuelta. I hope I pronounced that right. And you can see them both at the Floricanto Literary Festival June 20th to the 22nd in the Latino Cultural District in the San Francisco Mission. And next up, a bit of fiction for your imagination. Keep it locked right here on this station. We'll be back. With me, Janae Darden. Not Your Poppy's Utopia, Latinx Visions of Radical Hope, is an anthology where writers from the U.S. and Latin America don't necessarily write about a perfect future, but one where equity exists, along with the respect for the environment. And a few writers from the anthology will be reading at the Floricanto Literary Festival next weekend, and that includes writer Rolando Andre Lopez. He is an educator, writer, translator, bookseller, and polypsycho devil cartoonist from San Juan, Puerto Rico. And of course, he lives in Oakland. And I can say that because I'm from Oakland and he's here with me right now. Hey, Rolando.
Hi, Janae. It's great to meet you.
Yes, it's nice to meet you, too. And so you are going to share an excerpt of your piece that's in this anthology. So tell us what's it about. And
yeah, this excerpt is a bit from a novel that I've been working on since my time here at my MFA. And it's an excerpt from a section of the Not Your Poppy's Utopia anthology called The Utopian Enclave.
Okay.
And so the idea is that these stories in some way revolve around these sort of isolated communities that create a utopia within themselves in an effort to escape the crisis of the world around them.
Mm, okay. Yeah, I think we can relate to that right now. So.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, it explores, you know, all the complexities and facets of that in its own weird fiction type of way.
Okay, okay. Well, yeah, let's get an idea of this work.
Wonderful, thank you. In the living room, Mommy slept on the couch as the television played a marathon of the game show with the financial disputes. During a commercial break, I sat down and watched an infomercial about a mental health product. My ass was still burning, but I felt an immense relief. The commercial began with an aerial establishing shot of a wide green field where all the grass had been cut to look park neat at the extent of every horizon. It was a perfect green flatland painted by the light of the morning sun. There was a two-story house in the green flatland, and the house was desolate. But in the house, a woman emerged from her bedroom, walking through the empty living room, then looking out at the empty window at the green flatland. Smooth instrumental music played along to evoke the peace of sunlight's mantle upon the empty land. "Surviving a military bombing is no joke," she said in voiceover. A subtitle below read, "Susan Cariambra, bombing survivor and motivational speaker." "I have been contending with trauma," she voiceovered, as dramatized flashbacks of the bombings played during her narration. Torn off body parts on pavement, a child and mother sooty and running, smoke everywhere, police sirens, and bricks thrown at shields, and bullets from every gun, and generalized anxiety, depression, and bipolar disorder since then. But I was born a fighter. The flashbacks of screaming crowds and corpses on fire now faded to a shot of her running in the empty green flatland, wearing spandex sweatpants and a crop top. A contemplative piano piece lifted the mood of the story. Keeping track of my mental health has been key to my continued success. Everybody has a story. Take Clarexa for the life you want because it's never too late. With Clarexa, I have the focus, concentration, and drive I need to keep myself tasked on my goals and boundaries, no matter what obstacles come my way. Thank you, Clarexa, for showing me I can do anything I put my mind to. She survived with Clarexa, the lady in this commercial, but I survived just by staying home. That's what Mommy taught me. Out beyond the mountains, and even here in the young parts of town, people were being young, and youth is chaos, and chaos is dangerous. Add to that the wars and the bombs. Oh no, don't get me involved in that traqueteo, mijo, she had said. But she had been young too, had been young for a long time.
Mm. Wow.
Thank you.
Yeah. You know, when I go to readings, I'm like, I usually close my eyes so I can let it. I had to, like, just keep one eye open just to make sure my producer didn't have to tell me something. But I just wanted to let that sink in. One of the lines I liked was when the woman is, you know, having this traumatic flashback and running in spandex pants and a crop top. And I thought about the quarantine. Mm-hmm. You know, and I remember people were joking about how, mm-hmm. like, you know, we imagined in the future in a dystopia, we thought we'd be dressed really cool, but people were wearing, we have other people in the studio here. We have, you know, people wearing yoga pants and shirts and, like, which just shows how vulnerable, right? Mm-hmm. And how recent, like, mm-hmm. these things are happening. So that's what I picked up too. And then you have mental health,
yeah.
You know, in here. So what was the inspiration as far as behind this story, and then the pharmaceutical ad, so you know, appeal to cure everything, but mm-hmm. also to being mindful that, you know, people, you know, use medicine for their mental health. So
of course,
yeah. So
And then one more line that was cool when it says the mom was like, you can survive just by staying home, you know. So that was all deep. So kind of just tell us, like, where did some of that come from?
Yeah, where this novel came from. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned quarantine, because my other piece in this book I wrote exactly during the quarantine period. And I think many of us, I especially turned back to my family during the quarantine period. I moved back to Puerto Rico at the time I was in Boston. And it was also around the time that I rededicated myself to being a writer. And so it was a time of me reflecting on what was happening in the world, reflecting on what was happening with me, with my own mental health, and processing all of that through writing. And it took a long time to get to this story, but I did land on this story of this, you know, this young, this boy who is in a man's body. He's 35, but in terms of his responsibilities, he's still a little boy. And he's being taken care of by an aging lady. And they are, you know, in this very secluded community that is protected from all those troubles of the outside world. And yet there is a sort of grief living between them that also makes life in the house very difficult. And so in the context of that, what does utopia mean, right? If outside is crisis and then inside is crisis too.
And I love the idea of having the adult and the child in the body, because that kid never leaves us, right? You know, inside. And then how does that trauma affect that little child inside too? You know, who's an adult dealing with adult issues, but that child is still there. Real quick, it's like, wow, I was like, this went by so quickly. It's such a really, I just really appreciate the piece, Rolando. What are you excited about as far as being in this festival and the anthology? You know, there'll be other writers from that anthology, Not Your Poppy's Utopia, Latinx Visions of Radical Hope. Yeah, just in a minute, just tell us, like, what are you looking forward to?
Well, it'll be a beautiful event. It's on June 21, 3 p.m. We'll be at Medicine for Nightmares. The editor of the anthology will be there, Matthew David Goodwin. Sara Daniel Rivera, who was another editor for the piece, will be there too. And then we'll have two writers from it, Wendy Mareba Clubbins, who's also Puerto Rican, and Rosang Janke, who's writing, who's zooming in from Germany. And it's exciting because it's, you know, James Baldwin has that bit about, you think you're the only one going through something until you read a book, right?
Right.
And for me, the version of that was, you think you're the only one writing something, and then you realize you're one of 27 authors. And so you're really actually always part of a community that's doing the work. And once you stretch out your arm and once you put it out there, you see that it resonates with people around you. And so having a chance to celebrate that this particular community of this book is just a wonderful thing.
What does it say about the, and I know the Latino, Latinx, Latine, Latine community, I just wanted to get all the words. It's so diverse, right? But what does it say about the imagination? Because we're seeing, you know, marginalized communities, not that we haven't been imagining a better future, but we're seeing it now more, we're getting more opportunities basically to show our creative imaginations of a better future. And I'm thinking of this book. What does it say about to have, you know, brown folks imagining utopia, imagining a future?
Wow. I mean, it's, we've always been doing it, I feel, right?
Right.
Because I think, for example, of magical realism, this thing that has been kind of turned into a brand. I mean, for us, it's not magical realism. It's just, this is the way we tell stories. This is how my grandpa told me stories. This is how my grandma told me stories. And so it's about keeping a lineage keeping a lineage alive and bearing it into the future. And so there's a huge sense of pride that comes in that, a pride that doesn't depend on me looking down on someone else, but rather a pride that's born out of a sense of fellowship and kinship among storytellers from different cultures.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's what being in this work means to me.
Magical realism changed me when because I first read it in college, and like I had no idea people of color were writing that stuff, and I was like, what? And then that led me to Afrofuturism. So like I have like a love for, and I know, like you said, there's some criticism of magical realism, like that's just how we tell stories, but that opened like my mind. and just expanded my imagination. Mm-hmm. So, and then I minored in Latin American lit because of that. I was like, I want to read more of this. Mm-hmm. So, and it's, I was like, I wish I could understand Spanish because I know it's even more beautiful in Spanish. So, Rolando Andre Lopez, thank you so much. Rolando's work is featured in Not Your Poppy's Utopia, Latinx Visions of Radical Hope. And you could check for him at the Flor y Canto Literary Festival. And we have just a few minutes, but we do have the organizers here in studio. And they are some dope poets as well. And they're gonna close us out with a couple of pieces. Some how much time we got? Maybe 2 minute pieces, each of you 2 minute pieces? Okay. So Ricardo Tavares, you wanna go first?
Yes. Thank you for having us. Thank you for inviting us into this beautiful space. It's great to be here. Thank you. So before I start this piece, I just want to let you know, maybe you heard me here on the radio and you see me out on the street and you're like, hey, Ricardo. And if I don't respond back, it's because I got to be tough. OK, you're not going to see me walking down the street eating a paleta, a glizzy. Right. Because I got to be tough. And here's a poem to tell you. All about that toughness.
Okay.
It's titled, El Macho. El macho never gets blisters from chopping wood. El macho only wears rugged looking shoes. El macho wears boots in bed. El macho says getting ahead means cheating chumps. El macho never eats red sauce cooked by strange women. When exasperated, a macho sweat is flammable. El macho may shapeshift into a gentleman to seduce young ladies. El macho grows stronger with every emotion he suppresses. El macho never loses underwear lest they be buried under a woman's house. El macho flirts aggressively to avoid any question of his masculinity. In macho land, conversations end in abrupt silences. El macho can paraphrase feminist and gender schema theory to don a cardboard hat of gender dynamic consciousness. El macho expects food to appear with the wave of a belt. El macho concludes women who deny him must be lesbians. El macho does not speak to kids and instead speaks at kids. El macho only smiles when his team wins or when he's drunk. El macho only weeps when his team loses or when he's drunk.
I've met El Macho. Thank you so much, Ricardo, for that. All right, Josiah Luis Adrete.
Okay, let's do a quick poema for our L.A. familia, yeah?
Okay.
Yeah, because we've been thinking about our L.A. familia these past couple of days. Stay safe, stay strong, familia. I just want y'all to know our thoughts are with y'all, and I want you to know that the last time I was in Los Angeles, La Snaky Skirt herself guided us down Calle Figueroa, which is really the universe, which is really the long way round to the seven cuevas. I'm saying patas y patas past old ranflas that never left the block, down to Culebra Park with the shapes in the trees y el humo. La Sagrada Mama points to a spot where the elote once grew, feeding the entire pueblo. She says, this tierra was used by many back then. This new concrete, my children, belongs to only a few. And that's hard for these modern conquistadors to understand how messed up that truly is. As she finishes speaking to us, rust appears on the metal nail salon door across Figueroa, and La Snaky Skirt takes the rust as an offering, and suddenly a Polaroid picture appears in El Cielo as a strange cloud formation. At night, it's going to turn into a new constellation, and as we're staring up at this milagro in the sky, looking up at it, an old viejito shovels past us on Figueroa. Faded flannel shirt, thousand-year-old blue jeans on, impossibly worn-out vaquero hat on. Man, I recognize that viejito. Years ago, he used to be a guapo talking chili pepper painted on the corner of that taco spot on Avenue 50, and now he wanders up and down Figueroa because he can't remember who he is or what he once was. Mm-hmm. And when La Snaky Skirt sees this, empieza a llorar. Her lagrimas turn into a papaya licuado that we sip on as we cross the street, ignoring the white man's graffiti, porque los vale madre. She's got one more thing to show us, she says. Right there is a Campo Santo. And she puts on the pantalones that she sees, and she transforms again.
Thank you so much, Josiah Luis. Thank you. Ricardo Tavares and KLW's Josiah Luis Andrete are organizers of the Flor y Canto Literary Festival. Treat yourself to some good literature June 20th to the 22nd around the Calle 24 Latino Cultural District in the San Francisco Mission, which is along 24th Street. And we'll have a link on our webpage with the festival's agenda. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, board operator, Damien Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. And before I go, I want to say rest in peace to the great Sly Stone, who recently passed away at the age of 82. Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys also died at 82. And happy heavenly birthday to my grandmother, Angie Kesey, who would have turned 90 today. This weekend, San Jose, Berkeley, and San Francisco Bay, you have Juneteenth celebrations. And happy Father's Day to all the dads and father figures out there. We'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other,